welcome to the Geek Night In, episode 34. I'm your host, Laura, and I'm joined this week by Tilly.
Hello.
And Gemma.
Hello.
And we are doing geeky stuff and things. So can I start this week off? Because I've got a thing I'm excited about.
Okay.
I did my homework from last week. I wrote a short story, 500 words, based on a writing prompt from the Reddit depository of writing prompts. So hooray! This is one that, like, it was shared on Reddit, but you, Gemma, you shared it on Twitter earlier today. I like this one. It was one of the ones you shared, which was 50% of the world's population has the ability to fly. The only way to find out is to jump from a height that will surely kill you. Have you read this yet, Tilly?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to read this on the podcast. So this is a short story I wrote in about 20 minutes today. I stood there with the wind in my hair for what felt like hours, my toes curled over the edge. I had deliberately taken my shoes off on the way up the stairs. I want to be able to feel everything. Maybe I'll get some sense of what's going to happen. If this all goes wrong, I want to at least know I saved the small moments of that life had left to offer. This might be my last chance to feel the sensation of stone on the soles of my feet. I looked down to the street. It must be a good 40 or 50 meter drop. I stopped to take in the enormity of what I'm doing. Am I really considering this? Is it worth the risk? It's a 50-50 shot. If I'm lucky, then sometime before hitting the ground, some long dormant part of me will awake and I'll speed off safely into the sky. Unlucky? Well, I don't want to think about that if I can help it. I know this is only going to work from a height that's certain to kill me. I know that without my body being certain it's going to crash into the earth, I'll never be able to fly. Still, am I crazy for trying? I lower myself and sit down, legs dangling over the edge of the building while I think about the enormity of this moment. The ability to fly, to soar through the air, and to transcend the limits of humanity. The thought of myself as a distressing pile of mess splattered across a busy high street. I take a deep breath. The thought has been on the edge of my mind for so long now. I've not been able to shift it. Like that one tattoo design you know you're always going to be tempted by. I know the chance to fly will never stop causing an itch somewhere deep within my mind. It's inevitable I'm going to have to jump one day. Maybe today, maybe when I'm 90. One of these days I'm going to do it. I stand back up, unsure whether I'm going to leave the roof via the stairs or not. I close my eyes and try and clear my mind. I stop trying to rationally decide what to do and instead focus on what my gut is telling me. Breathe. 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 I jump. As I rush down toward the earth, a mixture of panic and excitement flood my system. Is it happening? Is it too late? Should I have felt something by now? Is the fact I'm worrying about this going to stop it? Would overconfidence stop it? Have I made the biggest mistake of my life? The ground rushes ever closer. I feel like my life is slowing down around me. Shroomph. Hooray! That is my story.
That's what we
I raised my glass of Porsche must to you. That was
my story.
I liked it. You definitely have a way with words.
That's a good thing. I'm a writer for a living. I haven't written fiction. I haven't written fiction in the last decade other than one other short story based off a writing prompt that I tried to write on a piece of A4 paper during a writing class at Nine Wells last year, which I lost and I don't know where it is now. But this is the first time I've actually tried to write anything properly in 10 years, and I'm really happy with it.
I would have ended it a little bit earlier. I would have ended it when I'm looking for pronouns.
There's no pronouns.
I'm looking at.
I deliberately kept it pronounless.
I would have ended it when they jumped, because I think that was a good place to end.
I thought about it and I wasn't sure, but I could have ended it where the jump happened, but I liked the idea of the emotions going through the head and to leave it on an onomatopoeic word that could be hitting the ground but could also be going into flight.
That did sort of make me laugh, though.
And that was my...
Made me chuckle, because it's a very strange word to end.
Yeah, but if you say it... Yeah, it could be either. And I was trying my best to find some kind of onomatopoeia that could... That, depending on how the reader read the narrative, could imply either ending. And I don't want to say which
Douglas
ending,
Adams,
Yeah, I don't want to say which ending I had in mind, but...
Yeah, I always like to believe the happy thing, so I think they flew.
But yeah, I'm really pleased with that. So yeah, yay, writing prompts.
Writing prompts.
I really like this as an idea. I want to try and make this a weekly thing I do. Not necessarily for the podcast, but once a week I want to try and write some fiction. And it's never going to be more than 500 words because I can't do long form fiction. But yeah, that was my story. Woo, woo.
There we go. We'll get a nice Geek Night In story corner.
Okay, yeah. On the podcast, I did mention it, didn't I? The short story prompt that I had that I wrote.
Which one was yours? The
guy who went to the dentist.
Yes.
And, yeah, yeah.
Wakes up with a briefcase handcuffed to him.
Yeah.
There's a few I really liked that you shared today, Gemma. I really liked, actually, I don't think you shared this one. There was one I saw on Reddit, which was an elderly lady you've been looking after is about to pass away. She has one final story left to tell you. I died age 17, she begins. And I thought that was fascinating.
I found myself resisting ones a little bit like that, which have so much kind of already in the narrative.
Yeah.
I felt like, because I was scanning through and unfortunately I still didn't pick one, but I wanted one that was kind of vague enough because I think possibly because I'm inexperienced, I tend to go for the sort of things I can apply a blank canvas to.
It's interesting. It's
interesting just looking at this.
Well, like I quite liked that particular prompt just because like, I instantly had an idea that I don't think most people would have gone to with it. Like, I think this might be the next one that I write, and I want to write something about, she didn't actually die at age 17, obviously. Well, not necessarily, obviously. It's a narrative. It could be anything, but...
Mine would probably end up being a Doctor Who fanfiction.
Well, I was thinking it's a Holocaust survivor.
Ah.
And that it's age 17 is when she went through the Holocaust, and she's like, as far as I'm concerned, like, I should have died there. And, like, it's her talking about, like, I'd want to do some research to be able to do it properly, but...
Yeah, you want to be careful with that.
But, yeah, I would like to do something of potentially, like, or not even necessarily the Holocaust, but someone who went through something very traumatic, and it's like, yeah, this is where I died, age 17. So I have some ideas for things. I'm like, oh, I like writing prompts. So I'm going to do some more of these, definitely. I do like the idea of doing the one about killing baby Hitler. I like the killing baby Hitler one.
You've got a very different route to how I do it. So where, no matter what the writing prompt is, I always change it so I'm writing in third person. I never, ever, ever write in first person. Can't stand it.
I find this as well. Mm-hmm. I find I can't write in first person all that comfortably.
I think I've seen
discussions on this from authors who... It is just it's kind of a hard and fast thing. It's very hard to switch from first person to third person in the middle of your workload or back catalog, whatever.
I can't do third person writing properly. What I can do is first person short stories. Like I can do first person stuff, but I can't do it long form. I can't make it like last more than, I can get a lot into 500 words, but that's about the limit of where like my pacing starts to fall apart.
I'm curious, what do you tend to read? Like, do you tend to read first-person narratives
I read a lot of third-person narratives, and I don't know why my struggle is with this. Like, it comes across in, like, a lot of aspects of my writing, because I know creative writing within my work. I wrote a thing for Destructoid this week that was... There's a video game in which you have gay sex with a car. That's a thing you do in this video game. And I wrote, like, basically... implied to be pornography about a car, and that was all done in first person because I can write in first person in shorts and bursts.
Well, because you play in first person as well, so that makes sense.
Maybe that is it, the fact I do so many video games in first person.
Actually, yeah, because I prefer third person action games to FPS. I think I would be inclined to believe that is just simply a mechanical thing and it's separate from this.
Yeah.
But certainly, in so far as the creative writing I have done so far, it's all been third person. And this might be because I tend to write design documents. So I'm writing narratives from a lot of different characters' perspectives. I tend to be looking at the overall world rather than through someone's eyes. But I've sort of noticed this recently because the book I'm reading at the moment is Jumper. And the author name is, I've completely forgotten. But it's the one that they made a film based on this book. Recently, I haven't seen the film, but the book was one of those that just appeared in a Humble Bundle bunch, and I ran out of other ebooks to read, so I read it. And this one's all in first person, And it's, and because maybe because I principally read third person, I found the first person leap a little bit different.
Yeah, like I'm very much like stuck in my own head all of the time. I'm very like introspective and just like I live in my own head, and like that seems a weird thing to say. That's an obvious thing, but like I feel like I spend a lot of time in my own head, like examining my own head, and like because of that, like what I know better than most, like I'm not very good at all at extrapolating onto other people, and like I find hypotheticals really difficult to do, and that's like been part of my big block for creative writing, is that I cannot extrapolate and do the hypotheticals required to write a story about a hypothetical other person that's not me. So like the only thing that like that stopped me from doing creative writing for the longest time, and I guess like for me, I got to a point where I was like, oh, what I do know is being in my own head. And like I can think about what my head would go through in different scenarios, and I can apply that to scenarios, and that makes first person a lot easier to write than it does like trying to do third person and imagine it's someone else. Like that extra step of imagination just doesn't click for me.
The worst for me is first person present tense. I cannot stand first person.
I can't stand tense. Reading
can't,
it.
Can't do it. I don't know what it is. Yeah, I think I get a bit. I just get a bit. What's the word? Rebellious, if that makes sense. I get quite like. It's like, oh, I do this and I do that. No, I don't. You tell me what I'm doing.
Oh, I'm doing this. No, you're not. The book was written in the past.
Yeah.
You are not doing that while you write the book.
Yeah.
It's one of the challenges I've thought about first person past tense as well is breaking out of the mold of I did this and then I did that and then I did this and then I did that. This whole sort of... I guess that actually there's a similar problem for third person anyway, so I'm going on a little bit of a tangent there. Don't mind me.
The way that my novel is written is sort of third person omniscient. So it's in third person, but the narrator knows everything that's going on. So the narrator can do like everyone's internal monologue and stuff like that. So that's just the way that I prefer to write.
Yeah.
Because I don't like reading a book and not knowing what's going on.
Yeah, but that's something I struggled with, internal monologues.
Yeah.
I ended up writing myself into situations where the character should have an introspective moment, but the only way I could really think of to describe it was like trying to really describe their expression in detail, like their facial expression, and just it just it doesn't sound good.
Yeah. Well, I've got I can't remember what I was going to say now.
Finish your sentences. Where are the ends?
Well, I just remembered that Kate gave me this idea for a character, and I was just writing him down, or them down anyway. It's a non-binary person. So I was just writing them down so I don't forget.
Yeah.
Huh.
No, interesting thing I realized while I was writing this today, when I write first person text, I do it genderless. I never use pronouns in first person like short stories, and I don't know why. I my best guess is that I'm doing it to not exclude anyone from the experience. Like I'm very non.
When you say pronouns, yeah. You mean like other characters in the narrative, or?
Oh no, other characters in the narrative can have pronouns, but like the first person, I never like specify anything about them. They are always very blank slate in terms of the physicality.
Mm.
It's like I think all I say about the character in this is they have toes. They have toes and no, they have toes and they have legs, and that's all you know about them. And like, I think that's how I like it. I like for like, if I'm writing something in first tense and someone's got to be putting themselves in the shoes of like a first person narrator, I think at least in my style, I find that it helps to not give any details that are going to, or as few as possible that are going to draw someone out of identifying in that situation. So yeah, narrative's tough.
Yay, books.
Well, are you still thirsty?
Yeah.
Do you want to have a cider from the box?
No, it's not going to make me less thirsty.
Yeah, so I was hoping to have at least some sort of prompt to tease people with, but actually I don't. But still, if anyone wants to offer suggestions, like either at the Geek Night Inn or at Raygun Goth, I'd love to hear story prompts.
Well, I unfortunately will not be able to do this task because I have to do a complete restructure of my novel.
So you can take 20 minutes to do like a one take, no edits.
No,
short
I'm
going to
feel really bad if I do. I'm going to be like, that's 20 minutes I could have spent working on my book.
Anyway.
The problem with working on Patreon. But
yeah, you've got backers now. They're expecting things. You put out chapter 2 recently.
Yes, I did.
Woo!
I haven't had anyone comment on it yet, though, which is concerning me.
Yeah, but no one's withdrawn their pledges, so that's also fine.
No, that's also good. But yes. I haven't anyone... No one said to me, oh, this is really good, or actually, this is shit.
Don't
Why
worry.
Are you bothering?
No one ever comments on anything I do on Patreon. I'm like, oh, I'm just shouting in the void and hoping that the money means that you're still liking it.
Yeah.
Attili, do you want to talk about Festivale?
Yeah. I'm a bit late with this, but if you play Animal Crossing, then you'll know what I'm on about. It was the 16th of February this year, so I'm, what, like 2 months late? But luckily there is time travel, which exists.
And you've managed to do it in a way that Mr. Rossetti is not upset about.
Oh, he's just upset when you, I don't think he gets upset in this one.
He gets upset if he notices you've been time traveling.
Oh.
But, this is a festival that happens in Animal Crossing, and I think the reason that you realised it was happening today was because I saw on Twitter that someone was doing an Easter egg hunt because it's Easter. And then Tilly was like, oh, it's probably too late in the day to do the Easter egg hunt. But I did miss Festivale. Maybe I'll go back and do that.
Well, so I'm saving the Easter egg hunt for when Laura goes to Poland and I'll sit around and hunt Easter eggs on Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
But I'm doing Festivale now.
So currently it's Festivale. It's the middle of February in Tilly's Animal Crossing town. Tell us, what happens on Festivale?
Festivale's great. Basically a peacock called Parve visits your town and confetti falls from the sky because it's a big party and everyone wears weird headdresses and they dance and sing and it's really cool. And every now and then like feathers of different colours fall from the sky and you catch them in your bug net and then you take them to Parve and depending on the colour he dances for you and he's really cool.
It generally just sounds like a really light-hearted, fun experience.
Yeah, I've been hunting feathers for the last 2 hours and I haven't even noticed. Well, I mean, obviously I have noticed, but I checked the time a minute ago and I was like, oh shit, I've been playing this since 7.
It's Geek Night in time all of a sudden.
Yeah, but I don't want to put it down because that's valuable feather catching time.
Yeah, she's playing while we record today.
So if I sound a little bit distracted, then that might be why.
I feel a bit better about the fact I was playing games up until, like, a minute before recording.
Oh, that's fine. I always do that.
You should do what I do and just carry on. Just see if anyone notices.
Like, I've previously played Euro Truck Simulator 2 while recording a podcast. That's the best.
I think I remember you drove off a bridge.
Yeah, this was Podquisition. I drove off a bridge by accident.
You're a genius.
Yeah, I crashed trying to do a U-turn on a road just at the depot where I had to drop my stuff off.
And incidentally, this felt very odd given that I catch up with the Podquisition usually while playing games. And at the time, it was Euro Truck Simulator. And it was totally better. But hey.
But yeah, that is Festivale, which is a nice thing. Like, I quite like doing that. I like playing simple video games while I'm podcasting because, you know, the company of friends, not engaging enough for me. You know, I need to do other things at the same time.
It's not that. It's something that you can, like, sort of switch your brain off a little bit. So I feel like I can concentrate better because if I'm not focusing entirely on what we're talking about, then I don't get all tongue-tied like I do usually on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm like... You're like, Tilly, what's this thing? And I'm like,
Also, it says something about society and the way that we now have to be constantly multitasking. Nothing's enough for us anymore. We constantly need entertainment in all forms.
Well, actually, I was having an interesting discussion on this with a few friends of mine. It's something I couldn't quite relate to, but they were talking about the fact that they knit whilst watching TV programmes. And you've mentioned this before as well, I think, Laura, the fact you can watch box sets while working, just like have TV series on like a second monitor or something, which I find completely alien. I can't relate to that.
It depends on what it is. Like, the last couple of days I've been working while having episodes of QI on, because QI is like, I can drift in and out of that quite pleasantly and enjoy it as background noise and experience it while I get work done. But then there are other days where it's like, no, this is a really tough article. I need to just have like lyricless music only.
I'm not allowed to sing while she's working.
Yeah, you singing while I'm working is very distracting. I love your singing, but I can't focus on making my own sentences and words if you're putting sentences and words into my ears.
That's something I struggle with as well. I have to, certainly when I'm writing game design stuff, I have to have instrumental music, and that tends to mean video game soundtracks. So I end up having to put on soundtracks to games roughly in the same genre or aesthetic as I'm working on in order to get any work done.
If I'm doing a review, I love to do the soundtrack of the game that I'm reviewing while I review it, because that's a really good way of getting myself in the right headspace. Otherwise, like, I like instrumental stuff. This week it's all been instrumental background tracks from Steven Universe on sort of like half an hour loops. But otherwise, like, I can listen to music with lyrics if it's a recording of that song that I've heard infinite times already, like that I already know all the words to and I know everything to expect, so that I can tune it out as much as I tune out in an instrumental track.
I tend to find when I'm struggling with writing a scene, if I put on, like, if I picture it as a movie and then I put on the soundtrack that I would have with it, you know, so if it's like a fight scene, I'll put on something really like punchy and energetic.
Yeah.
Well, and it's if like... it's a sad scene, then I tend to go with, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's that one by that guy.
What one by what guy?
The one that was on the end of Broadchurch, you know, the Plinky Plonky Ink music.
Oh,
guy.
Plinky Plonky Ink music. Oliver Arnoldson.
And it's called...
It's called Plinky Plonky Ink music.
No, it's not. That's the other one. It's called...
Do you want me to try and look it up?
No, because I know, I just don't know how to pronounce it. It's got all these weird squiggles and stuff over the top of it. It might be finished.
Well, if I can find it, we can show it to Gemma and she might be able to help.
It's called Poo-Urch Jordan or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. And it's really sad, so I tend to listen to that whenever I'm writing a funeral or something. Someone died.
Poo-Urch Jordan?
That's it.
Oh, right, yeah, that means 4-1 world or earth?
4-1 what, sorry?
4-1 Earth, I guess.
Oh.
That would be Swedish.
Yeah. Oh.
Hooray!
That makes sense in that the album is called And They Escaped the Weight of Darkness.
Ooh.
Yeah, quite a heavy title.
Oh, we should send you all the songs by him and you can tell us what they mean.
Yeah, Gemma, you can be a professional translator. I'm sure that's exactly how your night.
Let me just type you the Plinky Plonky Ink music one.
So I can put the like 100 words of Swedish I know to some use.
Yes.
Yay.
There's that one, but it's got, I don't know how to do the squiggly bits. Oh. I don't know if you know.
Losio. That's not Swedish.
Maybe he's got a mix of languages he uses.
He can speak more than one language.
Or it might be nonsense. It might be a nonsense word.
I doubt it, but yeah.
Possibly.
I don't think I need help to know what rain means. He's got one called rain. I was like,
okay.
I think I know what that means.
Anyway.
I can take an educated guess, even if it does have an extra E.
So, yeah. Anyway, Gemma, you have started reading the first volume of the Death Note manga.
Yes.
And you're not entirely sold on it.
No. I picked up volume one of Death Note from Seriateca a little while back. And it's good, but I think, because it wasn't what I was expecting, and to be fair, the amount it had been built up has some part to play on that, because I've obviously been aware of how much love people have for it. What is interesting is it really does interesting things. The fact the main protagonist is like chaotic neutral rather than a hero or anything, and
well, he starts chaotic neutral
but then Ryuk as well as kind of like you expect him to be evil, but he's more kind of lawful evil kind of thing. Yeah. It's an interesting mix.
Yeah. Like for anyone, should we explain it for anyone that doesn't know anything about Death Note?
I don't think there's anyone that doesn't know anything about Death Note.
Yeah, judging everyone on this. Yeah, for anyone that doesn't know, Death Note is about a Japanese school kid called Light Yagami who, he's getting very bored with his life and he's very sort of like, oh, I want something to change. And he walks outside of school and finds this book on the floor that's called the Death Note. And in the front of it, it has some rules where it's like, hey, you write down someone's name, they will die. And there are other rules in there. And he sort of looks at it. He's like, oh, this is a joke. But he takes it with him anyway because he's curious. And he's watching TV that night and he sees a crime being committed, being reported on the news. And he sort of writes down the criminal's name as it's being reported. And bam, criminal dies. And he gets very sort of like, oh, goodness, what do I do? What do I do with this power? And his decision is like, hey.
Well, he tested that again.
He tested out again. But like, basically, he realizes this thing is real. And he's like, I am going to use this to perform vigilante justice and take it upon myself to save the world. I am going to murder from a distance people who have committed awful crimes. And I will make the world a better place and I will make people afraid to commit crimes by killing off criminals and doing it in a way where people are recognizing there is a pattern. This is all one person. Someone is killing off all the criminals. And then it's this big sort of battle between this guy who can kill people without having to be there and a detective who's trying to capture him.
Mm. Adorable detective.
L is I love L, but yeah. So yeah, what did you think? What did you think, Gemma? Talk to us about it.
Well, it's worth saying actually. So far, L is still quite mysterious, and I'm kind of banking on his character becoming more interesting. Really, but
he does once you know who he is.
Yeah, it's kind of it. I think the thing that struck me actually was the fact it's quite formulaic. So you mentioned that there are rules regarding the use of this Death Note. And the thing is, after the first couple of chapters, which introduce the characters and the concept, every chapter seems to hinge upon, oh, by the way, there's this other rule. And
that's a lot of the beginning of it is, oh, by the way, there's this rule that you didn't know about.
That Ryuk deliberately didn't tell them.
You're going to do this? Guess what? There's another rule.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to do this? Yeah. No,
that stops being a problem not too far beyond where you are. But the beginning is very much like setting up the rules of this universe in a way to try and be like, ah, he didn't know.
Yeah. I guess I was mostly hoping it would do some more interesting things with the concept. And it's not put me off to the degree I wouldn't pick up Volume 2. I am going to give it a look. But yeah, it just wasn't quite what I was expecting.
Yeah.
However, it's worth saying that the art style is pretty gorgeous.
It is.
It's really nicely, cleanly drawn and things.
Yeah. My favourite thing about Death Note is the pilot chapter. I don't know if either of you have read that, but basically there's a school kid who picks up the Death Note and he uses it to write in the names of some kids that have been bullying him. And then they die. And the death god, the Shinigami that comes down to him, gives him a death eraser.
Oh, God.
And he can erase their names from the Death Note and it brings them back to life.
This was the pilot and it's not canon. And back at it, it's like, yeah, if this was canon, it would completely ruin everything about this whole show or this whole series. But it's interesting because the whole like moral core of this show like is, hey, this person is doing horrible things initially for the right reasons. It's, I am trying to reach these lofty ideals and from a certain perspective he is succeeding in making the world a quote-unquote better place by his moral standard through things that like he knows he's doing something wrong but he feels it's for the greater good. And on the other side you have lawful good L, who is like the first time you interact with him, I will spoil like the first interaction the two of them have like right at the beginning of this because I think it's a good way to set up what the two characters are like, is that L is always like two steps ahead of Light. He's very aware of like what he can do to take a very cocky, very self-assured person and get them to reveal things about themselves that they shouldn't. Like, hey, we're doing a worldwide broadcast and here is L, the detective who's trying to kill you. So Light does what he should do and goes to kill him. And then it's like, oh, turns out the person you killed wasn't L. he was a criminal who was on death row and was sentenced for execution today. Also, it wasn't a worldwide broadcast. We were starting with the biggest region of Japan. Therefore, we know which region of Japan you're in, and we know that you can kill people by seeing them. Now, try and kill me by just my voice. Oh, you couldn't? Interesting. I know more about you now. Like, it is this cat and mouse game of, like, two people trying to lure each other out and to sort of psych each other into revealing who they are. Because whoever finds out who the other is first, they'll kill them or they'll capture them. Like, they will win. You just have to find out who the other person is and you've won.
My my friends and I, when we were, like, 13, I think we were obsessed with Death Note. Like, we loved L and just... So there's this scene where L and Light play tennis.
Oh, God, dramatic tennis.
Yeah. So when we did tennis in school, we played dramatic tennis. And everyone else would just be, like, you know, messing around, hitting the ball to each other, and we'd be... I will not lose.
I don't want to spoil too much, but it's overly dramatic. Amazing. Basically, it is two characters play tennis and they are both, like, convinced that every move they make will prove something about themselves. It's like, if I win, will that prove that I am too competitive and prove who I am? If I lose, will it be obvious that I've thrown the game and then make it obvious who I am? Like, it is just overly dramatic, long thought. It's like the chess game of tennis. Oh,
it's so good.
It's so great. Like, Death Note, it gets better the longer it goes on. Like, my mum, it's the only anime she's ever watched, and she's really into it, and she likes having moral discussions about Death Note. Because there are some very interesting moral discussions to have throughout that show.
Yeah, it's really good, but it does tend to draw out a bunch of assholes as well.
Oh,
in
yeah.
That I was dating a boy. I know, ew.
Ew, gross.
Sorry, not all boys are gross, but this one in particular was quite gross.
A lot of boys are gross.
I convinced him to watch Death Note, because I was like, oh my god, I love it so much, you should watch it. And then he used to walk me home after school, and he was like, oh yeah, I thought Death Note was a bit boring. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, well, I could just tell what was going to happen before it happened. And I was like, how? And he was like, oh, it just makes sense that that's how that he would do this. And it just makes sense. This is how this would happen. And I was like, shut the fuck up.
If you show this to teenagers, you will inevitably get the teenage boys who are convinced that they are smarter than Light and L and are the smartest person who ever lived. And it's like, well, yeah, I could have got out of that situation because I'd have done it. And
well, I'd be like...
You get some really irritating types who read Death Note.
We used to argue and he used to, like, not talk to me for a few days because I'd be like, okay, well, how would you get out of that situation? And he'd be like, well, I'd do this, this, and this. And I'd be like, well, then L would just go blah, 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 blah. And he'd be like...
No.
And then he'd walk me home in silence, go home, and then I wouldn't talk
to him. The kids who would sit in L's sitting position and be like, yeah, I can feel that it's giving me 90% extra brain power.
Hey,
shut up.
Hey, shut up, I did that.
Sorry, Tilly.
I used to sit like that in class, and my teachers would be like, what are you doing? And I'd be like, it helps me think.
You're one of those nerds.
I was one of those nerds.
Anyway, if you vaguely enjoyed the first volume, I'd say give volume two a go. It does less of the whole, less of the explaining rules of the Death Note that somehow weren't explained before. And it digs more into, like, the meat of what makes that show good.
Yeah.
Or that series good.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I hope it's actually in at the library. One of the pervasive problems, I think I've mentioned before, about Death Note and a couple of other series I've tried to get into, is that they're always checked out of the library. And
yeah,
I could reserve them, but that's effort.
What I will say...
To reserve books at my library, I've reserved loads of Terry Pratchett books, and it cost me 90p per reservation.
They charge for reservations now at UK libraries.
What? Well, I don't want them then. Well, I do want them, so I'll pay the 90p, but still, outraged.
Yeah, if it's any consolation, they charge in Sweden as well, and it's only a little bit cheaper.
How much is it in Sweden?
10 krona, which is now about, 80p.
Oh, okay.
Okay. What I will say about Death Note is that it's one of the few things that I think has a really fantastic English voice dub.
Yeah, like, it's not horrible.
There are very few anime that have voice dubs that I would say are like fantastic. This is one of them. I think the voice dub on the English version of Death Note is pretty spectacular. Like, I am very happy to watch this in English. And I never seem to get bothered by the voices.
Yeah, I think so far I've only watched Cowboy Bebop and Standalone Complex with English dubs. Basically because I think the Japanese voices pale in comparison.
This is one where I vastly prefer the English voices. I don't like the Japanese voices for Death Note.
I prefer the Japanese voices. I don't like the dub.
Well, it's not a bad dub.
No, it's not bad.
You can agree to
like
that.
I just don't like the dub.
For me, it is like, it is the dub that I'm like, yep, that's my favorite dub.
The shindig is the bomb diggity. That's not a quote from Death Note. That's just a...
I'm glad that's not a quote from Death Note. Oh, goodness.
It's the voice actor Crispin Freeman.
Oh, yes.
I can't remember what he did it, but my friend was obsessed with him for ages, and it was about the same time as Death Note, which is why I thought about it. And that's something that he said for one of his voiceovers. He was like, this shindig is the bomb diggity. And now it's just in my head.
It will never leave. Oh, goodness, that is always the way. Right, so how long, what are we doing time-wise? Who else has things they'd like to talk about? Gemma. Lego Lord of the Rings.
Yes. I think I mentioned a few weeks ago the fact I was playing Lego Star Wars with my husband. And we managed to get like the 160 gold bricks and got all the mini kits and everything. So basically completed the game as much as we could. So then it was like, what do we do now? And it's worth saying we completed this on like Friday. And then we check Humble Bundle and see that all the Star Wars, like, there. All the Lego games, or at least a bunch of them, are on sale for like the first time in 2 years.
Ooh, how much are they at the moment?
A bunch of them are going for like €5, so I guess about £3.70 odd.
That's cool.
I get prices in euros.
Lego Star Wars.
I believe they do. Yes.
Yeah, we'll get it.
And I do recommend Lego Star Wars.
You have to get it for me. I love Lego Star Wars.
It is a slightly shaky experience.
Sorry.
It's a slightly shaky experience, did you say?
Yeah, the level design and various other sort of quality bits do definitely change between like the original films and the prequels. I believe A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, they felt stronger somehow. We ended up having great fun with it.
I did like the prequels. Well, not... You know what? I'm going to be controversial. There's nothing wrong with the Star Wars prequels, okay? Anyway. I used to like Lego Star Wars versions better anyway.
I kind of like someone's... this is the thing I learned about this week. There is a suggested viewing order for the Star Wars films that I really like, which is you watch Episode 4, Episode 5, Episode 2, Episode 3, Episode 6.
And you miss out Episode 1.
You skip out Episode 1 entirely, because Episode 1 doesn't actually in any way contribute to the main plot other than, hey, Anakin Skywalker joined with these people.
He's
with them. Like, he's a baby. He was good. Like, it adds very little to the overall plot, so you skip it out entirely, and doing so pretty much cuts out the irritating Jar Jar Binks. What you do is you watch Episode 4 and Episode 5, because they set up Luke Skywalker, they set up, like, the plot of the Star Wars universe most coherently. You get to the end of Episode 5 where you've got the big spoiler, well, not even a spoiler, everyone knows, but you get to the point where it's like, hey, Darth Vader is Luke's father. Then you cut back to Episode 2 and 3, and that's where you get your, oh, this is the backstory to how his father became Darth Vader and became his father. Then you go to Episode 6 for a strong finish where it's like, okay, I now understand who Darth Vader is, why it's relevant that he is Anakin's father.
Anakin's father.
Luke's father. That Anakin's Luke's father. I understand the weight of that now. Then you go in for a strong finish on Episode 6.
I would back that up. Because
the Phantom Menace is a bit pointless. But other than that, there's nothing wrong with the prequels.
Because we actually, we watched the six Star Wars films, and we actually watched them in pretty much that order, except we had Episode 1 in there as well and regretted it. One thing I did out of it is that Jar Jar Binks didn't feel as annoying because the original film still has C-3PO and the Ewoks. But they're not perfect.
Yeah, but they're not nearly as irritating as Jar Jar Binks.
They are only redeemed, in my opinion, by Han Solo, because he just carries the films for me.
Yeah. Well, what I will say about Jar Jar Binks is he's not so bad if you can brace for impact. If you know he's coming, you're like, okay, I'm bracing myself.
Yeah, I guess so.
I quite liked him when I was younger, but the older I've gotten, the more intolerable he's become.
He was clearly designed for the 9 to 11 year olds in the audience.
Which I was when I saw The Phantom Menace.
Yes.
Yeah. But I was young enough to get a lot out of the Burger King toy, which had the sticky tongue.
Oh, yeah, my friend's nephew had one of those.
Misa Jar Jar Binks. Ah! Misa Jar Jar Binks! Shut up.
I think my husband usually says, is Misa tasty? I think it was a parody from somewhere.
Yeah. That's Hooray for mildly racist characters. Yay.
And then there's Watto, who's supposed to be...
He's a Jewish stereotype.
Yeah.
He's a Jewish stereotype.
George Lucas is a racist.
George Lucas is like, he does have some racist leanings.
It's like, okay, but Disney's in charge now. And Disney will fix it.
George Lucas is like, in name only connected to Star Wars anymore, and that is how I like it. Because George Lucas has talked about him, that character being a Jewish stereotype in interviews. It's like, it's the big nosed, he's obsessed with money. Oh God, why did you do that?
Why would you do that?
And I like whoever it was that said that George Lucas has created a wonderful world. It's just that he should never have written media for it. Somebody else should have written the films, because
what I got is that Star Wars Episode 4, the first one, was wildly successful. Like, it was really popular, but George Lucas never quite understood what it was that made it so popular or successful. So now, because Disney's got hold of it, the films will be done by someone who grew up with Star Wars and who does understand what made it so likable and so successful.
Yeah. You're like, I don't want these films to turn out like The Avengers, for example, but
what's wrong
I think
with The Avengers?
No. Like, you misunderstand me. I don't want it. It's not that I want it to turn out like The Avengers, but I think that the fact that The Avengers exists and was as successful and popular and well-loved as it was is a very good indicator for the future of Star Wars, because as you were saying, I think that is an example of the fact that Disney can look at the history of a franchise, work out exactly what it is that people love about it, boil that down and make it mass market accessible, and to have something that pleases, at least to a reasonable degree, pleases longtime fans as well as like gets new people interested in it. And I think that's what Star Wars needs. It needs someone who can look back and be like, right, when Star Wars was at its most popular, what was it that people loved, and what do we need to recapture?
Oh, a rainbow feather.
So, hooray. I trust Disney pretty well with Star Wars. Did you find a rainbow feather?
I did.
What does the rainbow feather do?
The rainbow feather, it's supposedly extremely rare, but I've caught like 7 of them.
You have been playing for several hours, which is not generally what people do with Animal Crossing.
It's very immersive, okay? Anyway, the rainbow feather, because usually you have to catch 3 of a kind, like 3 of the same colour to give to Parve, and then he gives you furniture. But a rainbow feather, you can just give him 1, and he'll be like, oh my god, a rainbow feather! Give it to me!
Animal Crossing, everyone.
Don't play it. It ruins your life.
So Lego Lord of the Rings...
Yes,
yes. We went on a massive tangent. Lego Lord of the Rings, how was that?
It's good, actually. I feel like I've skipped a number of the games that Traveller's Tales have made. Lego Lord of the Rings, I don't actually know when it was made, but it definitely has much more of a sheen to it. The graphics are pretty gorgeous, although admittedly the environments don't look quite like they're made of Lego anymore. And it does really cool things with the co-op. Because one of the things with Star Wars is that you're both playing as characters running around and smashing things as you do in Lego games. But you're doing so on the same screen, which means that if you run towards the edge of the screen, you'll actually, depending on whether you're player 1 or player 2, you'll actually drag the screen and players end falling off things and stuff like that. Lego Lord of the Rings has something I've seen in, I think, one of the Marvel games as well. And if one of the characters gets too far, the screen will actually like draw a line down the middle, and it'll just meld from screen
the Lego
to single
Batman,
screen. It doesn't.
Yeah, the Lego Batman games do that really, really naturally. That it's just like it will create a very natural split screen and then sort of merge them back in together very naturally.
Mm. There are some ways to make it turn really quite weird, and sometimes you do have to stop what you're doing a little bit just for the screen to catch up. But generally, it's quite nice. I mean, I definitely prefer not being dragged off the edge of the screen. It's also weird in that Lego Star Wars doesn't have any dialogue. So one of the best reasons to play a Lego game is to have the FMV cutscenes where they act out bits from the film. And with Star Wars, it's worth seeing the Star Wars films recently so you know what's actually going on. But they add in all sorts of slapstick moments and like swap out props and things. It's brilliant. This does still work for Lego Lord of the Rings, because the change they made was that for this, and I think Pirates of the Caribbean as well, they've actually gotten voice clips from the films. So Lego characters are actually talking, but they still managed to make it hilarious, thankfully. It doesn't like lose all its charm or anything.
The only reason I actually watched Star Wars in the first place was because I was stuck on a level of Lego Star Wars. And I was like, maybe if I watch actual Star Wars, it'll give me an idea of how to meet this level.
Did it help you at all?
I can't remember. I got caught up in Star Wars and I was like, oh my god, where has this been all my life?
Oh, I really like that story. That's a really nice origin story for Star Wars for you.
One of the things that Lego Lord of the Rings has done, which is outside the canon a little bit, is it's thrown in kind of an unexpected NPC. I seem to have found a gender variant NPC in somewhere in the vicinity of the Mines of Moria, I think.
Oh.
This game is a little more open world as well. So again, rather than Lego Star Wars, where you've got everything spans out from the cantina. It's just got a hub and then you go out to the levels. In this one, you move through Middle Earth and you can fast travel and stuff, but it's generally keep going in one direction. And it also comes with fetch quests. One of which is from a female presenting character who has a beard. And the quest's setup is basically she's tired of not being read as feminine. So she would like you to fetch the very feminine sun hat. It's a pink thing with cats on it. I think it's from a top weather top. And she just wants you to fetch it and then bring it back to her so she can make it clear her gender presentation. And she speaks with kind of a deep still feminine voice. And it's
Can I ask, does such a sun hat exist that if I get it, I will instantly be read as feminine all the time? Because if such a hat exists, I need such a hat.
I think it would.
You need such a hat.
I need such a hat. I could do with such a hat being in my possession.
I think I have pictures of it, so I can try and give you, you can work out a pattern from it based on a Lego
piece.
I'll
go to, a haberdasher and I'll be like, I require this hat. Create for me this hat. I need the magical femme presentation hat.
I gather from her location that she's a dwarf, and this does call to mind the character of Cherie in the mines in Discworld. She's actually a member of the City Watch. And she is a feminist dwarf who is of a very rare breed in that she wears skirts. And everyone knows that female dwarves have beards and wear the same clothes. It's just like their outward gender appearance is completely the same. But yeah. Cherie wears skirts. But it came across a little bit like that. And it was just kind of odd because she definitely has very noticeable stubble and stuff. And it's just, I don't know what the comment made about it. It's just, I'm tired of being misgendered. Could you fetch my really girly hat, please? And when you give it to her, she's just really, she's just happy. She gives you a mithril block. You're good.
That's so cool.
I think we need to track down some of the Lego games. And when I get back from my traveling next week, we should sit down and play some.
Yeah.
They also have
Lego Star Wars is still the only game that I've ever actually been able to play, and not just watch someone play.
You played through Thomas Was Alone.
With Let's Plays. But my brother and I used to play, because I still can't play it by myself, but I can do co-op in this one. which is really cool.
I would say
I have two controllers for the PC. We can do this.
They also have Lego Harry Potter, both parts.
I love Lego Harry Potter.
Although it's also worth saying, actually, for the benefit of the listeners, I think it's an Easter weekend sale. So I doubt.
Quickly, go.
Okay, I'll buy them tonight, Tilly. I'm very sorry if they're not up when this podcast goes up. Just to let people know, I'm probably going to put this podcast up on Monday night, which is 2 days earlier than normal, because I'm going away for Tuesday and Wednesday to Poland for a business trip. So I will probably have this up on Monday. Hopefully the sale's still on by Monday, because it's bank holiday Monday in the UK.
Which is when I don't go to work, but I still get paid. Woohoo!
Woo! Hooray! Have we got anything else we want to say about the Lego games?
I love the Lego games. I've only ever played Lego Star Wars, but I've always wanted to play Lego Lord of the Rings and Lego Harry Potter.
Okay, I'll try and pick them up this week.
Buy them for me.
I would only add that I would repeat my recommendation. They are fabulous for like couples or just friends to play. They are pretty great in co-op mode.
But they are very accessible games.
It's also, you get so much more out of it if you're familiar with the films. I mean, we've seen Lord of the Rings so many times that we get all the jokes, basically.
Yeah, I think we've regularly seen all, like, most of the things that there are Lego games of. It's like Harry Potter, check. Star Wars, check.
I've only seen all the Harry Potter films one time each.
I've seen Deathly Hallows Part 2, actually, and that's disturbing because that's the one my sister's an extra in. I really should see that.
What's the one that I haven't seen till recently?
What happens in it?
Oh, it's the Chamber of Secrets. I didn't see the Chamber of Secrets until like last year. I just find the Harry Potter films really boring. I love the books so much. I've read the books about 1,000 times.
Harry Potter! Did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire? I was being more of a snake than Dumbledore, but okay.
I have found the Philosopher's Stone was a hard one to rewatch because I saw that when it came out and I was younger. I have memories of seeing it at the cinema, but it's hard to watch the children.
I was like, oh, babies.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's like, I suggest you both go to bed before one of you gets another a brilliant idea that gets us both killed or worse, expelled. Do you remember Hermione being like that? Because she was like that.
I also really liked a scene early on in Philosopher's Stone where when Harry is getting all the letters through the letterbox and his voice is breaking, like the actor's voice is breaking.
God bless. Oh, Daniel, my baby.
What was the theory, Tilly?
The theory was that to Hermione, being expelled literally would be worse than dying because she's always been like an outcast all her life. And now she's finally in a place that, like, where her abilities make sense and she's, you know, she's got friends who care about her and all this.
Mm.
So, like, to her, it's not like she's being facetious. Like, to her, being expelled literally would be worse than death.
It's, like, death is, like, an end to life. But going back to where she was before is, like, I now have to live life knowing that I'll never be that happy again. And so, I can kind of see that.
Mm.
Which is sad.
It's sad. It's very cute, though. Have you ever seen any of the outtakes from The Philosopher's Stone?
No.
When they were babies. Oh, it's so cute. Oh, they're so funny. Like, there's one from The Chamber of Secrets, where, I don't know his name, but the guy who plays Lucius Malfoy, he accidentally smacks Daniel Radcliffe with his cane. And he's like, oh my god, darling, are you okay? I'm so sorry, darling, are you all right? And Daniel Radcliffe's just like, yeah, I'm fine. And it's like, it's just so out of character because it's the bit where he's throwing a fit about giving Dobby a sock. And he's so angry about giving Dobby a sock. And then he hits Daniel Radcliffe with his cane. Immediate change in character. It's just, it's so cute.
Oh, goodness. I kind of have a soft spot for the films there. Some of them are harder to go back to than others, but I still kind of like them.
I like the books. Like, the books are always going to be my comfort zone. Like, when I'm having a really bad week, I will just get all my Harry Potter books out and make a little fort with them so I can read through them. But I can't handle the films. I just don't like them.
I did read a fantastic thing. I need to see if I can try and find it. About how Ron Weasley is the best character in those books by a long way.
Sorry, I'm giggling because I just had Potter Puppet Pal come back into my head.
Snape, Severus Snape, Dumbledore.
Ron Weasley.
Harry Potter.
My favorite was the one where like Ron is bother.
bother.
Harry's just like, Ron's invading my personal space.
I love where the one with Snape where he's like, I made some oatmeal. It was very watery. I thought of my mother and cried.
Half the audience who actually know what Potter Puppet Pals are.
Yes,
this might
go
make
look
sense.
Up Potter Puppet Pals. It's quite adorable, so but funny. I can't find the Tumblr post I was looking for. But like, it points out a lot of kind of adorable things that Ron does over the books, where it's like, yeah, he's amazing. And like, I think the one that sticks out to me of like little things that Ron does that are amazing is when Dobby dies in the final book.
Spoilers
for a book that came out like it came out like half a decade ago. I think we're okay to talk spoilers now. I'm really sorry if I ruined that for you. But when Dobby dies and he's being buried, Ron takes off some of his clothes and buries him in his clothes because he knows how important it would have been to Dobby.
Oh.
Like he buries him in human clothes because he knows how important that is to Dobby. What other things are there?
There's with someone called Dobby.
Oh, do you? How did I not know this?
Because she hates it.
Aww. So. But yeah, it's like when you look at some of the things where it's like, Ron was from a pure blood family, and like he is as privileged like bloodline wise as you can be in that universe, and he goes out of his way to be like, no, my friend here, it, like he's very much like an advocate for like mud blood rights. He's like, no, you are like amazing, and like he is in no way like his status as a pure blood in no way affects anything of how he lives. He's just like, no, forget that. That's unimportant. These people who are not the thing that I am, they're better. They're awesome. Pay attention to them.
The friendship between Daniel Radcliffe and Tom Felton, like,
they
hate each other on screen, but they're such like besties in real life. So cute. So,
what were you saying, Gemma?
You reminded me because I was thinking through a sentence earlier on, and I find myself wincing to say mudblood because I feel it's a racially charged term.
Did you feel how like? Did you hear how like? Yeah. I stumbled on it. I was like,
I felt like Laura said it, and we all tensed. Like, yeah, like
I can't remember what like. Is there a socially is there an acceptable term for it that's not a slur that's ever acknowledged in the books? Because like they describe what it means, like they say it is someone who is born to a pair of Muggle parents, but like there is no set word for it. There's like there is no non-societally charged analog to mudblood.
Yeah,
and that's really horrible because I went to say it and I was like, I don't know what the word is, and I feel like a terrible ally for a fictional race of people that I didn't go out of my way as a 13-year-old to learn a better phrase for.
I need to examine the books and be like, right, the word is.
I want to tweet J.K. Rowling because she sometimes answers questions about Harry Potter on her Twitter. I want to tweet her and be like, what is the non-offensive term for a mudblood?
Stop saying it!
I'm sorry.
Stop saying it!
But you see the point, though? That's a really weird thing. I never, like, it wasn't until I went to use it in a sentence that I suddenly realized I have never gone out of my way to learn what the analog term for that is.
I see that's privilege in action.
That is non Muggle parent privilege.
Non Muggle parent.
Oh no, I do have Muggle parents.
Ah.
I am unaware of my own lack of.
Oh, have we all privilege. Taken the Pottermore quiz as well to see what house we're in?
Oh yeah, I am Slytherin.
Oh, cool.
Hufflepuff.
Hufflepuff.
We are honey badgers.
Hufflepuff pride.
We are honey badgers. We look soft and cuddly, but we will scratch your eyes out if required.
I was very proud of my Slytherin. I thought I might end up placing Gryffindor, but nah.
I wanted to be Gryffindor, so I took the test like 1,000 times trying to get Gryffindor. And I came up, and every time I came up with Hufflepuff, like no matter what,
Did it give you an option to request what house you'd like to be in?
No.
No? Was the Sorting Hat not feeling up to giving you options that day?
No, because I was like, I want to be in Gryffindor. Why can't I be in Gryffindor?
Because you've yet to resign your fate to that of a Hufflepuff.
Well, I just did in the end. I think I took the test like 10 times in a row. And I was like, you know what? Fine, I'm Hufflepuff. Jesus.
And now you're really proud to be a Hufflepuff.
Yeah, I still take the test occasionally just to see if like it changes. But no, I'm still Hufflepuff.
Hufflepuff pride.
Huff pride.
Ah.
The bumbling badger of mediocrity.
Hey, hey, hey. That's pretty accurate.
This actually reminds me, because I've recently had cause to think about this, going back to Star Wars a little bit. Totally forgot to mention, by the time the next episode comes out, I will have done my free trial of the Lightsaber Combat Academy.
Ooh.
I am going to learn lightsaber combat as a martial art.
Can you wear a hat camera?
Sorry?
can we get you like a camera? Can we get you like a GoPro? Can we get you a GoPro to wear on your hat?
You'll have
and then you can show us what it's like.
Well, I think it's like the instruction will be in Swedish, so I don't know how much you'll get from it. I don't know how much I'll get from it, to be honest.
See,
but can we come to Sweden and you can translate for us while we fight with lightsabers?
Well, what I like about it is that, like, I initially thought it was Lightsaber Combat Academy because of copyright. But what they actually do is they do have, like, they actually split the courses into four sides. So they actually acknowledge the light side and the dark side. So I can totally be Sith in this. I would be Sith. This is the thing.
Don't do it, Lightsaber Academy. Don't let someone who knows they're going to be a Sith learn the Force. This is a bad move. We do not need more Sith in the galaxy. Gemma, I am banning you from this group thing. But you are not to train your Sith powers. Fair point. Sith have cooler powers, but no.
So,
you are not to be on the dark side, Gemma. I forbid it.
I need the training so I can force choke you remotely just now.
Yes. Next time Laura's like, no, I forbid you.
It's fine. I'll throw my lightsaber at you and you'll like disappear into a coat on the floor.
But the fun thing is they also have two other sides. So you can join the pink side, which is just acknowledging the women who are in the academy. There's also the pork side, which is where they do barbecues. Pork side of the Force.
I want to be on
that side. There is a side of the Force specifically dedicated to barbecues?
Yes.
How did I not know this?
I want to be on that side.
It's worth looking up because they are actually an international organisation. They are starting up in England at some point.
They make mention of specifically
England.
Kelly.
Yes.
Can we go learn lightsabers?
I don't know why you're asking me.
Well, I'm going to learn lightsabers with you. Will you come?
Of course I'll come.
Yeah.
They have like full on, like you have to apply to the lightsaber council in order to be accepted as a master. And I think you have to be accepted as a Padawan in the first instance as well. Oh, and then they have, it's been formed like on the back of a variety of martial arts and fencing and things like that. So it's fully, they've gone all out to make this a sport.
Well, I want to do it. So
I know what I'm looking up after we finish this episode.
I'll have to wait for my foot to heal.
Yeah, she's
at the moment, my foot is a very interesting shade of purple.
She's got a robot leg right now, which I don't think is conducive to lightsaber combat.
No, funnily enough.
Anyway.
If I was an actual Jedi, I could fight with a broken foot. But
now's a good time for us to wrap up this episode.
Do we have to?
Yeah, we do, unfortunately. It's like 10:15 and I have to be up early tomorrow because I've got to pack for Poland. Woo! So,
But about we end the episode and we just carry on chatting?
No, I've got to have an early night. That is the point. That's the point of ending.
Well, you go to bed.
Also, this is why I delayed the next podcast, because my next podcast was meant to start 15 minutes ago.
I would say, actually,
so I was like, I have to push that back.
This is a glimpse behind the scenes. This podcast is a conversation between us, but it actually does cut off when we stop recording, because Laura really has to do, like, other podcasts.
Oh,
or
I've
got to
go do another podcast. What?
Yeah, I'm really sorry. Like, this is your peek behind the curtains. Sunday nights are the night where I get like half of my podcasts are all recorded just back to back. So it's like I do, depending on the night, I will do like Podtoid, then the Indie Haven podcast, then the Geek Night In, and then Category Video Games, all back to back. And like, it's like, oh no, time constraints. Time constraints mean that I can't really hang around after the Geek Night In. I guess I could tonight because I pushed back category video games by a day, and because I've got to be up till midnight tomorrow anyway to like leave for my coach to the airport. So I thought I might as well stay up, and why not? We'll talk. So
yeah,
fine. We'll socialize when
we're
not recording.
We'll have a really like long episode of the Geek Night In.
we're cutting it off here because there's hosting fees.
Oh,
you also got to worry about that. Yeah, I only have enough hosting fees for about 1 hour and 10 minutes of recording every week.
Okay.
So thank you very much for joining us. Gemma, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at RayGunGoth, and that's basically like click from there through to my website. That's got all my stuff. I am also on Patreon at RayGunGoth, trying to do diversity things.
Woo! Yeah. And what about you, Tilly? Where can we find you on the internet?
Sorry, Gemma, with that, were you done?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
She said she was done.
Okay, sorry.
That's why I asked you.
Sorry. I was convinced you had more of a list than that.
I keep it simple.
So, unlike people.
Yeah.
So I am at Gathering Tilly on Twitter. And my blog is wordpress.com/valencekiller. And my Patreon, where you can read my book for $1 a month. Please, patreon.com/valencekiller.
Hooray!
So,
yeah, that is that. You can find me on Twitter at Laura K. Buzz. That's where I link to most of the things I do. You can find me on Patreon at patreon.com/LauraKBuzz. Laura K. Buzz on most things, as I said. I write news on Destructoid, where I get to write serious news in the morning, and then in the evenings I write silly things about like sex with car indie games. So yay! That should do it. You can find us here every week. We'll have another episode for you next week, and thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.